Hello, Leo, and welcome to Good as Gold, your 2014 mid-year report from Planet Waves, focused on this presence of Jupiter in your birth sign, something of the perfect astrological placement, if there ever was one, Jupiter in Leo, and you get the main benefits of that. Of course, we all get to tap in on some level, and Leo is one of those signs, I think, that is at the backbone of the entire zodiac. You probably feel this in the various roles that you are guided to play in the world. What I'd like to do is, on proceeding on the theory that self-esteem is the core of creativity and also of the resourcefulness that is necessary to help you earn your living in a more creative way, take the first two houses in your chart together. That would be Leo and Virgo. Now, I tend to work under the idea that when you want to understand what a sign is about, also look at the signs next to it, especially the second house. Because the second house is the tangible manifestation of what a person is. You know, a lot of who we are in name, in idea, in identity, as a concept, in self, as a concept. But when it comes to the accessing of resources, the value system, the reflexive relationship that we have to ourselves, I think that that is about the second house as well. And the first and the second work as a system. Sometimes it's possible to bring in the 12th house and get a lot more information. We'll do that if necessary. But let's consider the meaning of Leo and Virgo together. First of all, I believe that if there's one sign of the zodiac to be, Leo would be a great choice. Leo is the sign that seems to have it all. This is illustrated astrologically by the fact that the ruling planet of Leo is the Sun. And the Sun is in the middle of the solar system, and all the other planets revolve around it, or revolve orbit around it. And they also revolve around it as well, because they're revolving while they're orbiting. So Leo is the, well, it's the thing that contains every element. Now, Pisces comes in close second to that, though Pisces is more ethereal and abstract than Leo. Leo is tangible. It is materializing, whereas Pisces is dissolving. And so for getting things done on Earth, Leo is a great place to start. And anyone who's not born under this sign would be wise to know where this sign exists in their chart, because it is a potent resource. And for you, that resource is who you are. And so you may live knowing that you have all possibilities open, that there is nothing that you cannot achieve if you choose to do so. You understand that there is something about a human being that is, in a sense, supreme. And, well, the old thing from the book Stranger in a Strange Land, where all of the followers of Valentine Michael Smith would, you know, greet each other with the idea, thou art God, that a person evolved and awake has a connection to all that there is, and that bestows a level of what might seem like divine power. Really, there's a lot of worldly ways to look at it, and, you know, Leo, with the Sun concentrated there and all those different elements contained in the Sun, and every drop of energy that we consume on the physical plane on Earth having its origins in the Sun in some ways says a lot about the meaning of your sign. Now, it's almost as if the cosmos conspired to make sure that you don't go overboard with that thou art God stuff, and to ensure that, put Virgo on the second house. So when Leo wants to express itself in some form of manifestation, it runs through a kind of a governing filter known as Virgo. So you have Virgo on the second house. And what this is describing is, first of all, an orientation on service. It's almost like Leo is bestowed with so much power that it needs a set of principles to abide by, and we find those principles in the sign Virgo. And it's one of the reasons why Leo is such a tirelessly working and devoted sign of the zodiac, is because there is so much Virgo involved. And we also get with Virgo, in addition to the orientation on service, a self-critical factor. Now, this is one of those astrological cliches, but not only is it true, there's never been a time when it was more true, and never been a time when this function of Virgo needed to be questioned more. One of the ways that I know this is especially vital now is that there is this hypothetical planet, that's a planet without a body. It's not actually a discovery in the sense that some astronomer looked out of a telescope. The hypothetical planets, and there are nine of them, are purely the conceptions of the minds of astrologers. And I don't know and have not been able to find the exact points of origin. We see these things emerge on the scene in the early 20th century. But so far as I know, well, I don't know of any book written about how these things came into being. Part of the story involves the astrologers who were persecuted by the Nazis in Germany. All nine of the hypotheticals come out of Germany, by the way. There's a group of eight, and then there's one singleton. That one singleton is called Trans-Pluto, and it is, again, it does not exist. It has a very, very long orbit. It is a circular orbit. It takes about 80 years to go through a sign, and it is now making its transition out of Leo and into Virgo. And basically, since its use, it was probably first used in the sign Cancer, but then in the 1930s it entered Leo, and it's been in Leo since the 1930s. That's about 80, 85 years, and now it's making a three-year transition into Virgo. Now, Trans-Pluto is like the self-critical concept of Virgo balled up into one idea, and that idea moves like a planet, and it is, first of all, leaving your sign. I think that is going to provide some relief. It's been in the process of doing so now for about a year and a half or so, in terms of the over-critical, the hyper-critical, self-critical attribute of Leo, which hardly gives you a moment of rest, and moving that into a sign where I think it's going to be much more suited. Some would say it's going to disappear into Virgo. Not a lot of people use this, so there's not exactly a debate going on among astrologers, most of whom think it's perfectly ridiculous to use a hypothetical point without a body, except for the people who use it, who get a result from it, which we're now in the process of getting. And there is an added caution here to observe the self-critical aspect of who you are, to understand the self-critical aspect, to see it for what it is, and to turn it around and use it in a productive way for yourself. There is a second quality to this point, which is about specificity. It is about the ability to focus on one thing and make that one thing happen. And what I suggest that you do while we've got Trans-Pluto moving into your second house is that you focus your healing intentions on not giving yourself such a hard time. Let yourself be a little more free. What you think of as being wild is not necessarily that wild, especially if you're no longer 18 years old. You're likely to be more conservative than you think, not more freaky and liberal than you think. People do tend to become more conservative as they get older, and I think that has to do with a certain level of fear creeping in. And I would say that Trans-Pluto is cautioning you against the narrow-mindedness known as fear, which really would have the impact of narrowing down your value on yourself, therefore narrowing down your ability to use your mind, which is a Virgo function, the applied use of the mind, applied science. Virgo is, it's kind of like a counterpart to Aquarius, in that Aquarius really thrives on pure theory and in many instances, science that cannot readily be applied, but the way that it's applied is that it is applied in Virgo and through Virgo. Now, there's a thing hanging on my wall here. Interesting. So I've got a page from Esoteric Astrology stuck up on my wall here. Pull this off the wall and read it to you. And what Bailey says is, Aquarius releases Virgo from her burden, from her load. Aquarius releases Virgo from her load. And so there is an indication here that if there is a sense of burden that you feel, kind of a perfectionism that you feel, that is a suggestion to look straight across the dial and to move into the realm of Aquarius. Now, it's worth a minute to explain the relationship between Leo and Aquarius, which I did, by the way, talk about in the edition of Planet Waves that went out on, what day would that be? That would be Thursday, the 31st of July, where I give a few different perspectives on Leo, and then, of course, anything involving esoteric astrology is going to consider the Leo-Aquarius system, the opposing signs. And perhaps the most important thing to know about Leo is that it is the sign of individuation. It is the sign of becoming who one is. Now, you may think, well, all of astrology is about individuation. All of astrology is about becoming who one really is, except that that concept is, or appears to be, grounded in Leo. That's that particular main type of furnace. It is burning off this mass consciousness thing, and it is turning it into individual consciousness. And having Virgo on the second house is like an additional refinement filter, but that can become burdensome. And so if this perfectionism and if this narrowness about what you must be, you know, the ways in which you must succeed on the spiritual path, the ways in which you must be the perfect meditator, the ways in which you must do the perfect job, enter into the group environment, the actual group dynamic, not the mass crowd at Yankee Stadium, but rather the group of selected or self-selected people who are cooperating on something. And so what you will find is an extension of your consciousness in a group and a way to distribute the responsibility of living among a group. I cannot emphasize with greater bold and italics and red and underlined that it is absolutely essential in the life of a Leo person who wants to get anything done to be able to relate to a group, to be able to pass responsibility to a group, but still be aware of and make sure that it happens, to be an organizing principle within groups, to recruit, to make yourself part of every group, and to not get stuck in this somewhat typical Leonine mode of being an island. It is necessary to disperse that, I believe, and to spread out the concept of self among many people and to let go of some of that over kind of hyped need to be unique. I mean, there's a lot of ways that message gets sent, but in some ways it's coming right through your soul saying, ah, I'm now Leo or Leo rising. Now the time is here that I must become absolutely my own person, but that needs quickly to transpose into some form of a conscious collective. And this will help you live in a lighter way. It will grant access to your intelligence because your intelligence is functioning in an integrative way. So let's consider that idea. Now, we're working with three signs simultaneously, Leo, Virgo, and Aquarius. And I would say that those are the main signs that run the show for Leo, although in the next chapter, we're going to pick a fourth sign and add that to the discussion. Okay, so when we come back to values and self-esteem, one of the most vital things I could say about having Virgo on this house is that you value intelligence and that your life needs to be about acquiring intelligence. And in the style of Virgo, that is an integrated intelligence. Again, unlike Aquarius, where that can be that quality of knowing something for its own sake, Virgo is about applied knowledge, applied method, applied theory, applied science. So Virgo wants to seek out the method and apply the method, and I suggest that you do that, and I suggest that you do that in a way that very quickly fans out into a group environment. So if you work with a lot of people, I suggest you make sure that, you know, or there are like a lot of people involved on your team or in your department, that you not just focus on the few that you are supposed to be, you know, in daily contact with, but rather make sure that you know who everyone is and what everyone is doing, and that you serve as a kind of a collective intelligence server, making sure that there is a distributed smartness going around. And then you would also serve the function of noticing when knowledge is contained in an abstract way and bringing that knowledge into a tangible form that can be expressed. This will make it easier for you to be such a perfectionist about yourself. So there's a somewhat complex process involved here, but really it involves being yourself, recognizing when that gets to be a little too hot, a little too self-focused, and then from there, cool things off in Aquarius by making sure that you are part of an organized group mind of people who actually are individuals. Okay, let's add a fourth sign to this conversation, one where there is lots going on. There's relatively little going on in Virgo, except for this ingress of trans-Pluto, which I don't know of that many astrologers who are all that excited about it. And, you know, someone gave me a hard time a couple of months ago for even using hypotheticals. But it's like, well, they're there. It provides information. And so we've got all this information about this mental focus of Virgo and this need to turn narrowness into specificity and to turn a self-critical point of view into a point of view that involves integrative knowledge and applied knowledge. But let's switch houses to really one of the most active in the zodiac for anyone, and that is Scorpio, and Scorpio is your fourth place, your fourth house. That is the house of security. It's also the house involving your family of origin. The fourth is considered the taproot into physical reality. And what's interesting is that there is this, it's a little like living on a compost heap to have Scorpio there. It's as if there is some exothermic reaction that you have built your house on. And by exothermic, I mean that there is a chemical or biological reaction that is releasing a lot of heat. And this is true all the time, but now that we have Mars there, which is a fiery influence, and now that we have Vesta there, there is a lot of stirring the pot going on. And I think you've been asking many questions about the structure of your home and your family over the past couple of years, and I think you've seen yourself reach certain limits over the past few years, and you have set about being on a quest for what you might think of as true self-confidence, which means getting a lot of the worries and concerns and failings of dead people, your ancestors, out of the way, and having at least a well-tended, fresh, clean compost pile. There's all kinds of compost piles, but I believe that compost piles need to be maintained. There's a lot more to composting than most people think. You don't just throw a bunch of vegetables and vegetable trimmings in a box and watch them rot. There's a few ways to do it. The most important thing is to have an active, controlled process of breakdown. You can do that either with bacteria or with worms, who just are fantastic at turning things that you didn't think were worth anything into something that's absolutely delightful, which is pure, fresh soil. Worms are, like, really cool. And you have this reaction going on, but with all of these planets now added to the mix in Scorpio, a total of four major points, Ceres, the first discovered asteroid, now a dwarf planet, Vesta, the fourth discovered asteroid, Mars, and Saturn. You need to be paying attention to what's going on in this house of grounding and of security. And what is going on there is a whole new evaluation of your concept of safe, of your concept of grounded, and of your concept of how you draw nourishment out of the earth, out of your history, out of the past, out of your emotional body. And all of this Scorpio there is saying that this composting reaction now has accelerated in its intensity and its rate of change. You have two really fiery influences there, which kind of look a little like lighting a fire under your ass, to have Mars and Vesta coming through the fourth house. And these planets are all making aspects to planets in your sign, in Leo. So there is an integral relationship between all these planets on one leg of the fixed cross and all the planets that are in your sign. And so not only do you have all these planets in your sign, but they are being activated by planets in a sign that's very intimate to you, which is Scorpio. And so we get here is a lot of tension between your feeling body and your outer personality. We get tension between your emotions, which is a Scorpio thing, and your passion. We get tension between who you are expanding to become, and Jupiter in your sign is about an expansion of who you are, combined with the need to be grounded and secure, illustrated in part by Vesta and Saturn in Scorpio, and so there may be this sense of outgrowing your current reality. And when you're outgrowing your current reality, you need energy to build a new reality, and there is plenty of that indicated in this gorgeous dynamic between Leo and Scorpio. There's also something about breaking down the elements of who you are, that's this composting factor, into simpler and more, let's say, distinguishable things. Turning things that are useless into things that are useful, turning things that are conglomerated into things that are distinct and sorted out, turning things that are smashed together into one idea, into things that are distinct and separate. And again, that useless to useful transition is a really big one. Now, Saturn in the fourth house may be stirring up all kinds of insecurities, and so too is Mars likely to be stirring up all kinds of insecurities. So there's more tension between the confidence illustrated by Jupiter and the Sun and Mercury and soon to be Venus in your sign versus the insecurity factor indicated by Mars and Saturn in your fourth house. Now, this could be paralyzing for some people. I don't think it's going to be paralyzing for you, because I think that it's presenting itself in the chart in a way that is so conscious. And where there's consciousness, there's likely to be choice. And where there's choice, there is the freedom from paralysis. And so with squares that manifest like this, especially really powerful squares that involve, for example, Jupiter and Saturn, there's likely to be the sensation of toggling between two alternate realities and gradually integrating those realities. So everything that seems like an opposite, expansion, insecurity, new birth of consciousness versus the old accumulated consciousness in the fourth house and Scorpio, the beginning, the ascendant, the end, the fourth house, this is facilitating those very reactions that are helping you forge your whole new sensation of existence. Now, this is an inward process. It's somewhat mysterious. Scorpio, anything going on with Scorpio is very likely to be inwardly directed and not of itself expressive, not of itself especially vivid, not easily seen or known for what it is. And then everything that's of the nature of Leo wants to express itself in a bold way. And these two things are once again stacked in a way that some would say is a clash, but that you could also say is this intentional process of integrating these two separate concepts. And what it comes down to is needing a way to describe your identity that does so with a sense of safety and belonging, and then a way to describe security that does not get you over concerned about what you need to be safe and belong on the planet. You already do belong on the planet. And really, the truth of the fourth house is measured in the way that you feel. And so you have this conflicting set of feelings, and yet there is something that really is true about both of them. And then, you know, what is true generally does not conflict with something else that is true. So this is going to be going on for a while. One time frame to be aware of is late August, when Mars makes a conjunction to Saturn in Scorpio. And this is a reminder that if you are worried about something, or there's a domestic matter that you have to take care of, to do that before the issue is forced, before you are put under too much pressure to do something that you could just as well do voluntarily. And in many ways, that is one of the keys to autonomy, is being able to see what decisions you need to make in advance of being forced to make those decisions. Okay, let's pick a new house, maybe proceeding in order. I'm not going to cover all 12 houses, but I am going to cover the ones that that I believe are the most salient. So why don't we, well, there's a few more to cover here, so let's just get busy. I'm going to take the fifth and the sixth places as one concept. In a way similar to taking the first and second as one concept, the fifth is about activity, but it's more of a creative nature, and the sixth is about creativity, but it's more of the work nature. It's more of what we would consider to be the business side of life, the more structured, necessity-oriented. The fifth is more the risk-taking, creative side of life. And you have Sagittarius on the fifth house. Another fire sign resonant with yours. And the fifth is pretty freewheeling creatively. It is followed up by the sixth, which is another example of a governing device placed on your creativity. This is a little like the wide perspective of Sagittarius meeting the kind of corporatized, structured requirements of Capricorn. Now, these elements will work together. There is there's enough tension to make them work, and there's also enough reciprocity to make them work. In reality, Sagittarius and Capricorn work very well together because Sagittarius wants to push the envelope and it wants to consider any possibility, and Capricorn is saying, well, there is a limit here. But the thing about Sagittarius is there's a lot happening in it right now. It is one of the major concentrations of new planet activity. And by new planet, I don't mean asteroids. I mean the newly discovered things, all of which are basically discovered since 1992. Caraclo, Curiclo, some say Pholus, Ixion, Hylonomy, many points that have been discovered since 1992, which is a watershed year in planetary discoveries, plus a number of asteroids, plus the deep space points. Your creativity is boundless, and it's especially boundless right now. You have a lot of material to work with. But that encounters this sense of limitation all the time. It's very similar to the way that Leo has a boundless quality or very large quality, and then it meets up with Virgo, which is saying, remember the details. Let's break this down into concrete steps. Let's analyze how this works. Wow, is that really that creative? And that can have the effect of applying the creativity or the effect of smothering it. In a similar way, Sagittarius on the fifth house, creativity, sex for fun, pleasure, gambling, risk-taking activity, all of which are artsy, sexy, meets the limiting principle of Capricorn. But here's the thing about Capricorn right now. It's not in its ordinary state because it has Pluto in it, and Pluto, on its 250-year evolutionary journey around the sun, has arrived in the sign that is most closely associated with the dominant structure, with the necessities of living, with the requirements to follow tradition, with a hierarchical structure and all that. That's meeting the unstoppable force known as Pluto. And Pluto's moving very slowly through Capricorn. I believe it makes its exit into Aquarius in 2023, 2024. So we're really looking at about 9 to 10 more years of Pluto in Capricorn. Kind of amazing it's going that fast. It entered Capricorn first in 2008 and then dipped back into Sag, then entered Capricorn to stay in 2009. So we're really about 6 years into approximately a 15-year process of Pluto in Capricorn. And what this is saying is, the idea here of this transit is that the limiting principle normally applied by Capricorn to your creativity is in itself being cracked apart, broken down, and transformed. Said another way, there's no need to be trapped in your ideas of what is the right thing to do, what is pragmatic, what is safe, what is going to be acceptable to society, and instead to make friends with and recognize the ways in which you can adapt to the many things that are changing in our culture and that don't require you to basically conform to some kind of an outside set of requirements that may have been valid 5 or 10 or 20 or 100 years ago, but that are very much in transition right now. Now, Capricorn is associated with tradition, and one thing about tradition is that it's alive if it is changing. So a tradition that doesn't change is basically what you can think of as a dead tradition. Pluto in Capricorn is speaking of a tradition that is very rapidly changing, that is very much alive, and that is therefore a living tradition. It's also talking about the ways in which the world is changing, the workplace is changing, sixth house technology is changing, a sixth house function. Concepts of wellness are changing, and wellness being a potent theme of Pluto moving through your sixth house in Capricorn which is saying basically that in order to be healthy, you really do need to restructure your existence. In order to be productive, you need to make more space to work. And that as well, the leadership function of Leo is extant in Pluto in Capricorn by saying that you're the one who must spearhead the most important changes in your work environment. And if you're not necessarily going to spearhead those changes, that it is necessary to take part in them with the full knowledge that they are a necessary part of the evolution of the world. We all know the world must change. We all know there is a lot of stuck energy that is trapped in structure. And yet at the same time, we all know that structure is necessary to support things. So Pluto making this very gradual move through Capricorn is kind of like renovating your life one room at a time, renovating your sense of mission one room at a time. And this is part of a much larger global process that, you know, you are doing your little part to serve and to support, and that will eventually feed energy back into the greater whole. So bear in mind that what you're doing is infused with purpose at every turn. Okay, we've mentioned Aquarius, that being the necessity to relate to and through groups, especially when you feel yourself getting narrow. Take it to the group. Take it to your coworkers. Take it to your friends. Expand that idea of who you are into a group consciousness where you recognize people are actually speaking for themselves. The next house out from that is Pisces on the eighth house. And one thing that's so interesting about Pisces is that it is the usual place that you go for relief from having this somewhat tough on yourself approach to life. And that is going into relationships where there is a little bit more ease and where it seems like the people who you're with love you more than you do. And that just gives you an opportunity and experience to learn that way to direct love at you. But it also gives you a chance just to let others do it for you. Now, I would say that rather than letting anyone do something for you, that you want to learn by example and do things with people. There is a lot of new water flowing through this most watery house in your chart where Pisces is located, and that's coming in the form of Neptune. But there is also the invitation to bond with others in relationships that are specifically about healing. That becomes what you might think of, in the words of Carolyn Mace, the sacred contract. That the sacred contract is an agreement to heal. That is the invitation of Pisces, and Chiron in Pisces. It's not just about believing together. It's not just about a shared fantasy. It's not just about a shared life. It's not just about the shared resources implied by the eighth house, of which there are many, many, plenty of resources, but rather it is about the intent to focus on healing with people who are in your life specifically as healing partners. Now let's jump ahead to the 10th house and conclude on this note about the purpose of your work is to facilitate healing through creative process, through that which serves, through that which is pleasurable, but nonetheless, there is a healing emphasis. First of all, the sign that you have on that house, on the 10th house, is Taurus. This gives you a steadfast quality that is extremely admirable, and it's one of the reasons why you have such stick-to-itiveness, is because you have Taurus in the 10th place, and Taurus is kind of like the icebreaker of the zodiac and wants to keep on going, even if the going is slow, even if it takes 100 years to get something done, Taurus is going to focus on that one thing and making that one thing happen. This is a very good sign to have as the one describing your house of achievement. your house of career, your house of accountability, of visibility, and the long process involved of building a reputation. Now, the most interesting thing going on with Taurus right now is that a relatively new point. Remember I mentioned that 1992 was a watershed year in the discovery of minor planets. There were two minor planets discovered in 1992 that were the second in their category. So, for example, Chiron was discovered in 1977, but there was not a second planet in the Centaur category till 1992. Pluto was discovered out in the Kuiper Belt in 1930, but there was not a second object discovered in the Kuiper Belt until 1992, and that was 1992 QB1. Once those two discoveries were made, there was a gate that opened, and then suddenly, now we have about 1,000 bodies discovered out in the realm of Pluto, and maybe about 100 or 110 that are categorized as centaurs or probable centaurs. And you have this planet that was the first thing discovered beyond Pluto, called 1992 QB1, crossing into your 10th house of achievement. This is a, well, it's kind of the perfect influence because it wants, it is striving for almost like having a nameless reputation. It's the kind of thing that says, when you look at something that doesn't necessarily have credits on it, like a well-made camera, it just has a brand on it, but you don't know who the engineer who designed that really cool viewfinder is. There's no specific credit given. That's 1992 QB1, is the nameless devotion to quality without the need for credit. And so what we have here is something of a contradiction indicated, where there is a drive for doing the best work that you can possibly do, but without the need to have your name associated with it. Now, this is kind of like the perfect antidote to some of the more shadowy sides of Leo, which are about, you know, being famous, but it's all about glam, which is not necessarily describing you, but it certainly describes a lot of people who were born and became very well known with Pluto in Leo, generation spanning back to the 1940s to the late 1950s when Pluto was in Leo. And this is the complete antithesis of that. This is the statement that says, someone around here is doing a really good job. I don't know who it is, but you secretly know that you're the one who is doing a very good job. And this is, I think, the approach to take to work, to service, to creativity, which is to not worry about whether your name is associated with something, but rather knowing that something that you are doing is contributing something that is of the highest caliber of work, of the highest integrity, but no one really knows who it is, except people who do know. They're more likely to be on the inside than on the outside. And I would say that it's much more important that you be known by name for what you do by the people with whom you are the closest, rather than having to strive for having a well-established reputation in the world around you. One can easily transpose into the other when the time is right, but let's just say that QB1 in Taurus allows you to be a very high achiever, but to do something that's not that easy for humans to do, which is to keep your ego out of it. Whatever that word is, we all seem to understand it on some level. So this really makes it about the world itself and not about you, even though that you know you're the one who is in this evolutionary process of growing and becoming and refining who you are and perfecting your gifts and perfecting your craft and your talent and making sure that you kind of polish and finish everything down to the smoothest and most elegant that it can be, but without having to have the distraction of making sure that your name is in lights about everything. This goes against some impulses of Leo, and it definitely feels good to get recognition. But there seems to be something of a phase in your life where doing things for their own sake with little to no reputation, or crediting the entire team, is the way to go. So to sum up, I don't know if I have expressed the bold optimism that I have about Leo and what it means to be Leo at this time. I think I've been looking at some of the more intricate details in the circuitry, looking to flip switches for you and help you have the tools to clear things out of the way that don't belong there, like the baggage of any dead people that you may have met, you know, great-grandparents, grandparents, great-great-grandparents who you haven't met, parents, especially parents, and doing many other things as a way of clearing out the conduits and all that stuff. I've been focusing on that, but really I will tell you this is a massively bold time to be a Leo. There has not been much planetary activity in Leo, certainly none consistently, not since Saturn passed through the territory in something like 2005 or 2004. It's been like 8 years since there was a major influence, right? There have been things that we don't recognize, some things that, you know, most people don't know the names of. Obviously, Mercury and Venus pass through, Mars passes through, but Jupiter is the first slow mover that is going to give a consistent sense of your self-presence in a long time. And I will tell you that it's going to feel a lot better than Saturn felt, which is almost like gaining self-presence by doing that winnowing down thing that Saturn is so good for. And yes, Saturn always grants some reward, but Jupiter is like collecting on the preparation that Saturn helped us do, often hard won, and giving you a sense of your presence in the world. And while you're feeling your presence in the world, always stay in touch with that insecure part of you. Give it a voice, and then listen to what that's saying and understand where that insecure part is coming from, and then decide what you count as real and what you want to do. And, you know, in closing, I would say all of this Virgo stuff, especially Trans-Pluto, is saying get in the habit of not being so hard on yourself. And when you feel yourself getting hard on yourself, tap into your knowledge. Tap in to how much you know, and allow your knowledge to replace any sense of self-criticism. Never tell yourself you're unintelligent. If you're ever feeling like you don't know, that's not a question of intelligence or lack of intelligence. That's a question of needing to find out, dedicating yourself to finding out, and then actually going and doing it. And remember that the information that you acquire will help a great many people and will contribute to this fantastic team spirit that is passing through your life right now. All right, that is my message for you. If you are born with the Leo sun, definitely check your rising sign. You'll need your birth time, or at least an approximate birth time, to get your rising sign. There's a number of different web services like astro.com. Serenu.com also will calculate the ascendant for you. I would check with two sources, maybe ask an astrologer, and check out your rising sign. There will be more information for Leo contained in the signs that I have emphasized in this reading. I would say that for maximum benefit, look at the earth signs, Virgo, Capricorn, and Taurus, and definitely check out what's going on over in Aquarius. All right. Don't forget the Q&A session that's going to happen the third or fourth week of August. So give this a second listen. Write down your questions about any theories I've offered or things that I've said that you're wondering what they might mean, how they might apply to you, or if you need me to elaborate on something. And I will catch you over in that Q&A session in a couple of weeks. Thanks for being a customer of my readings. It is always a pleasure to work for you. Thank you to all the Leos in my life. two of whom make Planet Waves possible, Chelsea and Anatoly. The triumvirate consists of a fish and two kitties. Okay, till soon. Bye for now.